Well, I'm very thankful and excited for the opportunity to speak today, but I'm also cognizant that I am the final speaker on the final panel, and being in this unenviable position, I will aim to make my remarks very brief and very basic. So this morning we were talking about progressivism and the younger generation. Now, when I think about progressivism and the younger generation, a startling fact confronts me, namely that the young people who identify themselves as progressive and liberal today, some of them in my classrooms, find the politics of Woodrow Wilson and Theodore Roosevelt almost as repugnant as they find the politics of John Adams and James Madison. In other words, young progressives don't seem to like the old progressives of the early 20th century very much at all. Yet we've been talking about the old progressives much of this weekend and not the young ones. So what accounts for this difference between the old progressives and the young progressives? And what does this tell us about the relationship between those original progressives and today's? That's what I want to focus on in my brief time this morning. My basic point is this: something happened to progressivism in the 20th century. Something changed about progressivism between the early part of the 20th century and today. And we must be attentive to that change. But first, I actually want to suggest one important aspect of early progressivism which has been embraced and not rejected by today's progressives. And that is the transformation of the American conception of democracy. As R.J. Pistrito explained yesterday, the progressives' view of democracy was quite peculiar. They touted democracy, but they also entrusted rule by unelected and unaccountable experts. The progressives responded to this dilemma by redefining the meaning of democracy itself. The prevalence of the new view of democracy, which prevails today, is illustrated by a quote from the distinguished political theorist Michael Moore. At the close of his recent film, Capitalism, A Love Story, Moore states, "The alternative to capitalism is democracy." To the framers, such a statement would have been rather perplexing. It's still perplexing to me today, that the alternative to capitalism could be democracy. But the concept of democracy has been transformed over the last 100 years, and this is one of the most lasting effects of the early progressives. So these early progressives, such as Herbert Croly and John Dewey, openly asserted that American notions of democracy had to be transformed. The traditional definition of democracy, of course, is rule by the people. This is what it means in the original Greek. Whether the framers were critiquing democracy or defending it in a qualified way, they always understood that democracy meant a formal conception of government, the form of government, and how power should be exercised. Progressives such as Herbert Croly and John Dewey changed all of this, and they did so deliberately. They explained that we must abandon the formal definition of democracy for a substantive definition of democracy. Instead of indicating who should rule, democracy would now mean whether one promoted democratic outcomes rather than followed democratic procedures. John Dewey explained, and I'm quoting him, "The gist of the matter lies in the question whether democracy is adequately described as the rule of the many, whether the numerical attribute of democracy is primary and causal, or secondary and derived," end of quote. For Dewey, the numerical attribute of democracy, rule by the majority or rule by the many, was not its essential characteristic. Democracy did not mean primarily rule by the people. Rather, the democratic purpose or ideal would be the new definition of democracy. Similarly, Herbert Croly called for the subordination of the machinery of democracy to its purpose, the mechanisms of democracy to the purpose of democracy. The work of the progressives, transforming democracy into a set of substantive policies rather than an idea about the best form of government, lives on both in academia and in politics. In intellectual circles, the progressive notion of democracy today goes by the name deliberative democracy, and David Alvis referred to deliberative democracy in the thought of President Obama in the previous talk. In contemporary politics, this new understanding of democracy also lives on. Witness the recent events in Wisconsin, where protesters condemned the outcome of the political process as undemocratic. On March 10th, the day after the legislature finally voted on Governor Walker's proposal, Jesse Jackson took up his pen and charged that the decision by the elected majority in the state legislature, quote, "undermines the basic principles of democracy," end of quote. And you constantly heard the charge that the members of the state assembly undermined 50 years of democracy in 50 minutes. What they were saying was that the majority was anti-democratic because they did not follow the democratic ideal. That democracy was on the side of the protesters was their claim, not the majority party. That democracy was on the side of the representatives who fled the state, who went to Rockford, Illinois, to subvert the political process. This was the democratic choice in that situation. That the real Democrats were those who employed what James Madison called in Federalist 58, quote, the baneful practice of secessions, a practice subversive of all the principles of order and regular government, a practice which leads more directly to public convulsions and the ruin of popular governments than any other which has yet been displayed among us, end of quote. Apparently, the framers were not immune to these kinds of things either. But according to today's progressives, when a minority of representatives flees the assembly, rendering the majority unable to make laws, we accuse the majority of being undemocratic. This demonstrates the depth of this shift in democratic theory. So while the progressives' legacy of the redefinition of democracy lives on, there are still profound differences between the old progressives we've been discussing this weekend and those who today call themselves progressives. And that's really what I want to emphasize. These differences between old and new progressives are clear on the surface. Today's progressives talk a lot more about individual rights than the old progressives. They are far less moralistic than their progressive ancestors. And they trust the courts a lot more than they trust administrators these days. Franklin Roosevelt famously declared in 1933 that the day of enlightened administration has come. But for many of today's progressives, the day of enlightened administration has come and gone. What unites all of these changes in progressive politics is a fundamental change in the left's view of reason and science itself. Every so often, the left debates whether it should call itself progressive or liberal, and these debates pop up in blogs and in magazines. During one of these debates, Jacob Levy, who writes for the New Republic, said this. He rejected the term progressive to describe himself because, quote, progressive as a concept is tied up with a philosophy of history that has long since been discredited, end of quote. So the contemporary progressives reject the philosophy of history which undergirded old progressivism. They no longer believe in the philosophy of history. They don't believe in progress. They no longer have a faith in progress. And they therefore have no faith in the state's ability to be the engine of progress. See, old progressivism combined a faith in historical progress with a belief in historical relativity. In other words, while they believed that principles of government must change and evolve, they believed in progress, necessarily implying an objective framework of better and worse towards which we are progressing, something objectively better. As G.K. Chesterton explained, nobody has any business to use the word progress unless he has a definite creed and a cast iron code of morals. For progress, by its very name, indicates a direction. And the moment we are in the least doubtful about the direction, we become in the same degree doubtful about the progress. So he understood, as the old progressives did, that belief in progress is nonsensical without a corresponding belief in objective knowledge of better and worse. Old progressivism, in short, rests on a foundation of belief in objective truth. By contrast, new progressivism is highly skeptical of any understanding of progress, which rests upon objective foundations. The decline of intellectuals' faith in progress in the 1960s redefined old progressivism as postmodern progressivism. And that's the progressivism which prevails today. The most intriguing result of this shift from old to new progressivism has been the change, which is still lurking, I think, beneath the surface on the left, in the left's position on science itself. Popular perception is that the left is the party of science and the right is increasingly hostile to science. But this is at odds with the philosophical developments occurring under the surface in contemporary liberalism itself. As the left gradually abandoned faith in progress in the 1960s, it had to abandon belief in objective truth and reason, and therefore, the philosophic underpinnings of postmodernism are such that it must eventually become increasingly hostile to science itself, And this is what's going to happen to new progressivism. Alan Bloom noted these trends in his famous book, The Closing of the American Mind. In that book, he expressed astonishment that his colleagues in the hard sciences talked about, quote, the irrational source of all conscious life in Freud and the relativity of all values in Weber. Yet this did not pose a problem for them and their optimism about science. Had these scientists actually considered the implications of their postmodernism, they would have abandoned science as just another cultural perspective. Bloom wrote that these scientists know not what they do when they talk about creativity and values and narrative. And many of today's progressives speak more about myth and narrative than they do about reason and science. Of course, this does not mean that science has been totally abandoned by the left today. But the result is an uneasy tension between postmodern progressivism's theory of knowledge and its practice. As Sheldon Wolin once noted, by today's progressives, quote, truth claims are regarded as a matter of discursive conventions or an expression of will to power. Discourse in politics becomes performance rather than persuasion, end of quote. And I think that adequately captures the kind of political discourse we have today, which is performance rather than persuasion. So while old and new progressivism are not identical twins, perhaps we can say they are fraternal twins. They bear some resemblance to each other, they have some connection to each other, but there are also important differences between those older progressives and today's. The most important of these differences has to do with the left's view of the Enlightenment. Postmodern progressivism has rejected the very idea of objective truth upon which early progressivism rested. Today's progressivism is thus an incoherent blend of the scientism of the old progressives and the postmodernism of the new. Although the divide between the founders and the progressives is far wider than this divide between old and new progressives, this latter gap between the old and the new progressives still requires our attention. For until we understand how to explain this difference, we will continue to aim at an elusive target when we talk about progressivism. Thank you.